And 20 seconds left in the game. Heroes and villains all tied up at two. Gold medal game. Spidey swings over the line. Back to Captain America. Cap centers it in front for Richards. Reed Richards stretches out and scores! Yay! Heroes win the gold Olympic gold medal.
Nice. I like that.
All right. Welcome to Comic Culture.
Oh, nice.
The radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio and podcasting at comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com. I am Walter Duralia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your Olympians.
Hoping never to get drug tested in the spirits of fair play.
Indeed. Chris.
Walt, how are you today?
Not bad. Welcome to this thick of the Olympics.
Thick of the Olympics.
Comic culture show.
Yes. And you know what? We should introduce Shecky here to my left. We have Shecky Feldstein, producer extraordinaire.
Right. And let's not say he's master engineer extraordinaire, because obviously the lack of music for the intro means that Young Buck he may not be irreplaceable, but he is not replaceable by Shecky. No,
that is true. By no means. That is true. We will get music back into the show. We just like the fact that we decided to go with a little something different for the show.
Yeah, we decided to go without music this show.
Yep.
Specifically because we didn't know how to put music in.
Our listening audience doesn't need to know that.
They didn't need. Okay.
No.
All right. Listen. We're here every week, as we are every week, because that made sense.
Except last week.
Except we're not here.
To talk about the culture of comics, comic book culture.
And what do we like to do when we do this?
We champion the local comic book shop, right. Chris. All the local comic book shops around the world wait with bated breath for this show to come on
to champion them.
Because we are their champions.
As they should.
And, and it's a funny thing, because when we're on,
yeah.
I don't know if you've correlated this or not.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
We're on Wednesday.
Right.
You ask any comic book shop what their busiest day is.
Oh, that's a great question. You know what they'll say? A very good correlation.
They'll say Wednesday.
Yeah, it's very true.
You know, coincidence?
I thought maybe we were going to say we win more Olympic gold medals on Wednesdays.
Well, I hope so. I hope Canada wins a whole bunch.
Yeah,
today.
Yeah.
But hey, listen, we're a nonpartisan, so wherever you're listening in whatever country, we hope your nation wins a whole bunch of gold medals.
Today. Absolutely, absolutely. All right, listen. All right. We are here to talk about comic books. So, you know, let's just jump right in. Do we have a sponsor this week, Shecky?
You know we do, Chris. So, new this week is brought to you by Canada's Olympians. Who else had a beer fridge dispensing free beer at the Olympic Games?
Oh, well, you know what? They're very true.
You know what? Honestly, I think they use it as strategy. You know, that, oh, the Canadians are getting free beer. Oh, we don't have a passport that scans. Hey, Canada, we spot us a few brewskis?
Yeah.
Oh, take all the beer you want. Get smashing drunk and gold medals for Canada.
That's very true.
Yeah. All the way. Hey, listen, it's great being a Canadian with that reputation, right?
Yes.
Like, you know, the Canadians, oh man, the beer over at the Canadian.
Go to the Canadian.
Go to the Canadian thing. Yeah. You want to be that guy.
That's
you want
right.
to be those guys where everybody's coming to you.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. All right. Listen. All right. We do wish all of our Olympic women and men good luck in the rest of the games.
Godspeed.
Yes,
and
that's
Excelsior.
Right. Excelsior. We are here to talk about comics, however, so let's get right
now.
Are
we ever
going
to get?
Are we ever getting to that? Chris?
You know, if you guys would just let me finish, we can do that.
Finish. Now those guys did really well.
You know what? They are very good, very strong, very strong, especially in hockey.
Yeah, I always loved it when we're playing hockey and the Canadians crossed the finish line. I always found that funny.
As long as you did.
All right.
Listen,
Chris, get to the comics.
Savage Wolverine number 15. This is Wrath Part 2, and this is a story by Richard Eisenhove, and he does the story and the art in this one. Interesting story. I really like this story. It takes place partially on an ocean liner.
Oh!
On an ocean liner, which is kind of different. You know,
Caribbean cruise?
Not quite. It's more like a deckhand kind of thing, you know. But
he's pooping the deck.
But yeah, interesting book. And this is by Marvel, of course. I do like the story. It's a little gory, actually, even for Marvel. You see, there's It kind of goes all over the place, actually. It's in South Dakota. It's on an ocean liner, but it's a little bit gory, a little more gory than I thought would be for Savage Wolverine.
And wow. You like it because of that?
No, I'm not so sure I like it.
So you might poo-poo it.
I'm kind of poo-pooing
it. You poo-poo the poop deck.
It's a little bit too gory for me.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I don't like it either.
For a Marvel comic, it's a little too gory. I don't think it's right. You know,
it is a parental, to their defense, it is a parental advisory title. Listen, Savage Wolverine number 15 is available at your local comic book shop. But hey, if you are under 18, pal,
good luck.
Don't look at it.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
And for my second pick of the week here, I've got Batman and Two-Face number 28. This is, it's actually, it's actually an interesting book. It's been an ongoing story for a while now, but the way they've intertwined the story, they make Batman and Two-Face have to become allies. I don't want to give too much of it away, but wow, it's an interesting book. It has some flashbacks, and Two-Face, he's so unpredictable, so it's one of those interesting books. And there's some homages to the movie Psycho in there as well. It's an interesting book.
Maniac Psycho. Batman and Two-Face number 28.
Yes.
Is available at your local comic book shop today. Check that out. And of course, this is all we're covering today on New This Week.
Yep.
But there are literally thousands.
Thousands.
Of new titles coming out today.
Every week. Every week, thousands of new comics.
And all you have to do is go in, peruse your local comic book shop's New This Week stand.
Yep.
And sample what you like.
Exactly.
And,
all right.
And hopefully Walt isn't stocking the shelves, otherwise they'll probably not be listed in alphabetical order.
Oh, that's not very nice to say about Walt.
It's hard now, Chris. It is. There's so many titles.
It is. Yeah. It is. Very difficult.
And, you know, some of them have, like, the big, bold kind of, you know, shaboom.
That's right.
But then they got little boo-boos.
The big shaboom. Yeah. Boo-boos shaboom.
And then you don't know whether to put it under boo-boos.
Or shaboom. You know, I wish there really was a comic called Boo-boos Shaboom.
There might be now after I hope you so. And I. Some guy's listening going, yeah, that's the title.
What would boo-boos...
It's gold, Walt. It's gold.
But what would Boo-boos Shaboom be about?
It would be definitely be a woman.
Okay. Oh.
And Boo Boo Shaboom.
Wait, would it be a spinoff of the Honey Boo Boo terrible reality show?
No. This would be like a, you know what? I don't know what it would be like. But it would be damn good.
That's why you wouldn't write it. Don't worry.
Yeah. All right. So, Shecky, we're going straight in because we're not having any music this week. We're going straight into mailbag. Do we have a mailbag?
I cut the music right out of this program, yep. Chris. I did it intentionally.
Yep. Good.
Because you know what? We don't have enough time to discuss all the important things that we want to discuss. The music really gets in our way.
We have important things to discuss?
Absolutely.
Oh, right. Okay. No. Well, listen, do we have a mailbag this week?
I do, but like usual, I like to intersplice it halfway between industry news.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
All right. So let me get into industry news then.
All right. Fair enough.
I'm glad we all discussed this before the show.
Oh, boy.
Hey, listen, guys. So Batman. Chris, you're familiar with character Batman.
No. Yeah, I love Batman.
There's a new toy line. But that New York City toy thing. It's the biggest
toy fair. Yeah.
You know, they announced there that there's some new toy lines coming out for Batman. Batman animated series, Son of Batman, Little Gotham. And I started thinking, you and I have worked the comic book beat for the last, you know, between 80 years at least, yeah. Right? And is there a character, honestly, when you think about it, is there a character that has even half, I'll even say half, the amount of different toy lines that Batman has had?
No, I really don't think that there is. I think that Batman definitely is the king when it comes to that castle, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think, Spider-Man may have, he has offshoots, but doesn't really have a lot of toy lines.
Yeah, but you know what? It seemed like Batman for a while, and I think it's still continuing. It seemed like every single reincarnation or artist interpretation or whatever, Batman Black and White.
Yeah.
The toy line.
Yeah.
Batman Hush.
Batman Superman.
The toy line. Batman Superman. The toy line.
Yeah, Superman. You know, yeah.
But, you know, like, toy line.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
It, unbelievable.
Even Dark Knight, years ago, had its own toy line. Batman and the Animated Series.
The thing that catches me is obviously, this trend isn't stopping.
It would be interesting to find out how many different incarnations of Batman there have been in toy form.
Yeah.
There's got to be, what, like 2,000?
I don't know.
You know?
I don't know. Yeah.
I would think it's probably close to that. Yeah, if you think about it from the 1960s or whatever, you know.
Even from the 40s.
From the 40s. 30s, really. How many different toys or figurines or that kind of thing have come out based on Batman? Now you say that we've got Batman the Animated Series, mm-hmm. and Son of Batman and Lil Gotham. Now, Lil Gotham, that's the one that's sort of, it's a little bit more kid friendly, right?
Yeah.
So obviously they're going to probably have a little bit more distorted kind of figures and that kind of thing. Like usually like to exaggerate everything, right?
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, like, would a hardcore Batman fan still buy all that stuff? Like, does he go to the Toys R Us and just got to sweep the aisles and pick up everything?
You know what? I'm sure for these toy things, there's completists like there were are for comics,
yep.
and stuff, and they have to have them. So there's going to be that core group of Batman toy collectors that have to have all the lines, and I think that's what Batman toy launches depend on.
Right.
Right. And then you got that crossover. You got the little Gotham stuff appealing to the kids. You got, you know, black and white. You know, appealing
right.
you know, the Sergio Aragonés type Batman, yeah. just kind of the collector or the fan of that series. But right in the middle of all of those is that person that has to have everything single one.
Yeah.
You know, okay, first of all, that guy, you know, probably doesn't have a girlfriend.
Never got a dinner.
No, I'm saying that because I'm just saying, imagine the space that takes up.
Well, oh yeah, for sure, for
just,
sure.
Just collecting Batman.
Collecting Batman of everything, right?
Oh, imagine the space that.
Okay, well, interestingly enough, though, so the second series that you mentioned here, Son of Batman, it's actually a direct-to-video movie. So
right.
It's not even a. It wasn't even a comic.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't, you know, a major motion picture. It was a direct-to-video movie that they've now made into a toy line. So it seems like they're really stretching the well here as far as what they can make into a Batman line of characters, right? Like, it just seems like they're willing to pull out all the stops and do absolutely everything that they can do.
The point is, I think, Chris, is they're doing it because past history has told them that it
it's
will
gonna
succeed.
Sell. Yeah, yeah, it's going to sell.
All right. So, hey, ask your local comic book shop whether they're carrying
it. Yeah.
Or can order you these new Batman toilets.
Absolutely. All absolutely.
Right. Let's move on, Chris. Let's talk about, Chris.
This is interesting.
Guardians of the Galaxy. So last night, was it on...
Jimmy Kimmel.
Yep.
So Jimmy Kimmel, they had a full trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy. They actually teased it earlier in the day with a 15-second trailer,
mm-hmm.
and then they gave the full trailer on Jimmy Kimmel Live last night. And it looks awesome. You know what? It looks fantastic. And I'm the only thing I'm worried about is it's characters that, you know, geez, even most comic book characters don't know these.
Yeah.
Comic book collectors don't even know these characters.
Okay, so I read, you got to listen to me. I'll cut to the chase here. But Marvel's synopsis of this thing, this space adventure, is Peter Quill, a guy, finds himself the object of an unrelenting bounty hunt after he steals a mysterious orb coveted by Ronan, a powerful villain. So to try to get away, he makes a truce with this quartet of guys, including Groot, the tree-like guy, Rocket Raccoon, Gamora, and Drax, of course, the Destroyer.
Right.
But when Peter discovers the true power of the orb and the menace it poses to the cosmos, he must do his best to rally his ragtag rivals for a last desperate stand with the galaxy's fate in the balance. How cool is that?
It sounds awesome. You know? Sounds absolutely fantastic. You know,
like,
what?
That sounds better than good.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know what? It's going to have to be better than good for it to draw an audience because of the bizarre characters that are involved in this movie, right? It's going to have to blow people away because otherwise people will have no interest in going to see it. I mean, people are interested in the mainstay characters. But, you know, now that I say that, even the mainstay characters, a lot of people who aren't comic book fans didn't even know who characters like Iron Man were, right?
Sure.
So, you know what? Maybe this is going to be a new jumping on point.
You know, yeah, you're right. Here's the way I look at it. What do we all love, right? I mean, what do all of us, you know, like Star Wars?
Yep.
What are like the all-time greatest properties? You know, Batman, Star Wars.
Indiana Jones.
They all started as a nothing.
Yep.
Right?
Yep,
true. So here's a good litmus test on a great story.
Yep.
A lot of money backing it up. It's going to be some great visual effects. There's... you know, the characters are not known, but we're going to now see whether, you know, just how, I won't say just how important characters are to the viability of the movie, but I will say just how important characters are to the viability of the movie. And I think Marvel is banking on the fact that, hey, guys, once you guys love these guys, we're going to spread these guys out into stories with the other guys, which you already know.
Right.
We're going to try to get these guys up to speed as quick as we can so they're on the same level as the other guys and have a smorgasbord of guys. you know what I mean?
It's raining men.
It's raining men. Hallelujah.
You said it's a smorgasbord of guys.
Smorgasbord. So, yeah. When I mean guys.
I know what you mean. Characters. I mean characters. Yes, I know.
Because, you know, you can go into a room with gals and you go, hey, guys, how you doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do that all the time. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
And you can go into a room with guys and say, hey, girls, how you doing? You can do both.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true.
One will get you a black eye.
Yes.
The other one will get you a hello.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm pumped about this. I think it's going to be a good play.
Yeah, no, I do too. I think it's going to be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to this movie. This is, we've got... On April 4th, we've got Captain America, the Winter Soldier coming out. And then in August 1st of the same year, we're going to have Guardians of the Galaxy. And then next year, in 2015, we're going to have Avengers Age of Ultron.
Wait a minute. What's the May 3rd one?
Spider-Man.
But that's Sony, right?
May 2nd, Spider-Man.
It's not part of the whole Marvel kind of collected.
Right, I got you. So, I got you.
This is all still part of phase two of the Marvel, the giant plan.
Right? Yes.
So, and then we're going to have phase three, which, I'm hearing all different types of stories of who's going to be involved in phase three. And I think I've heard Doctor Strange might be involved in phase three.
Yeah.
So we'll wait and see what happens with all that.
All right. Listen, Guardians of the Galaxy. So go online, just Google Guardians of the Galaxy, I guess.
It'll be all over the place.
And very exciting stuff.
All right.
All right. We're moving along here. Shexter.
What do we do? Are we doing some mailbag finally?
We're doing mailbag.
All right.
Hot off the postal delivery service. Hey, guys. It having been Valentine's Day last week, I took my lady out for dinner. All night, though, I felt bad because I could only try and think of the answer to this question. What marriage or kiss had the biggest impact in comics? Just wondering. Steve from London.
Oh, that's a great question.
Steve from London.
Who do you think it is? I have my ideas. I have my thoughts. But who do you think it's going to be?
Well, I think, the Reed Richard, Sue Richard marriage in the early 60s was like a pivotal moment in comics.
Yeah.
Probably lately was that dumbass Spider-Man hanging upside down.
Ah, that was mine from the movie. Wrecked it.
That was a big popular one.
But that was really in comics. Though,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you're right. But, but that kind of what that did is it got comics noticed outside of comics.
Yes,
yeah, it won the award for best kiss.
Yeah, it was
MTV
talked about outside the comic world where, the Reed Richard one, the marriage and stuff was within comics.
Right,
It's like the royal wedding.
Right, that kind of stuff.
So I don't know. Those two come to mind.
See, I like the Amazing Spider-Man one, where they had the two different covers. The one had Spider-Man marrying Mary Jane on one cover, and then it had Peter Parker marrying Mary Jane on the other cover, because one went to, like, the direct market, and one went to the newsstand.
Yeah, that was annual number 21, Chris. Right. And one had the guests were... villains and heroes on the one,
right,
and there were like civilians on the other,
right,
dressed as civilians.
So I like that one. I thought that was neat because the ones dressed as civilians, that was sort of like it was like a nod to the people who bought comics at the direct market,
right,
so they could actually look at them and say, oh, hey, that's Reed Richards or whoever it is,
right.
Whereas the people who were buying them at the supermarket, they would know that who's that guy marrying Mary Jane, right? So they had to put him in the Spider-Man suit and, right? So I like that. I like
that makes sense.
That's
for
the stupid people.
Well, come on now. Don't make fun of
uneducated. Uninitiated.
Right.
May have been one of the smarter things Marvel's done then.
Yeah, you're right.
So I like that. And plus, they made a huge ordeal out of that. I think
I remember.
That was, wasn't that not where they rented out Yankee Stadium or something like that, and they had a big... party there based on Spider-Man.
It might have been.
All I know is that I was working for a comic book store at the time. We had John Romita come in, and we had wedding cake, and we had all somebody dressed up as Spider-Man. So it was awesome, awesome time. So
beautiful.
That's what I remember.
What about you, Shecky? Oh, did I steal it?
Well, you know what? No, you stole that. But if I had to then, you know, because technically it's comic books, I said, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be the Archie one in my generation, right?
Yeah.
Because like, in my generation, you know, I'm a little bit younger. I can't remember back. I can't recall the Spider-Man thing. I wasn't into books, you know,
right.
as a young child or anything like that. But the Archie one, I mean, Archie's been around since what? Well, like the 40s?
Yeah, 41.
You know? And then finally, it's almost like he's going to make a decision. You know, and, well, spoiler alert, you know, it's all dream sort of sequence,
yeah.
and he ends up marrying both at some point.
Yeah.
But, man, everyone wanted those books. That was so ground-shaking.
Yeah.
And everyone found out about it. It was in mainstream news everywhere. And
it
everyone,
was everywhere.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was.
Yeah. And it was, what, a six-issue thing?
Yeah, it was three issues per side.
Yes.
Yeah, so it was even stretched out, and people just kept flocking. I mean, did they not just keep flocking to the store, Walt,
oh,
to get
great.
Those things?
It was great. We need Archie divorced and
married
again.
Yeah, yeah.
The divorce issue.
Archie Bitterman.
Archie Bitterman.
Archie the cheater.
Yeah. Archie the
well,
cheater, yes. That's cool. It was a Biff who emailed?
That was Steve from London.
Steve Biff.
You know,
Biff.
And, you know, in the spirit of things, comicbookdaily.com is kind of like our ground zero.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's listening, if you feel you have a different kiss or marriage, you know, scroll down on the podcast page, leave a comment in the comments field, and let us know who you think.
And make it's like a family-friendly website.
Yeah.
So keep it clean. Mm-hmm. All right. All right, excellent mailbag, Biff. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve.
Steve. Sorry, Steve. Thanks for emailing that in.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's just keep motoring along here.
Kill the rabbit. Wait,
there's no musical interlude
no?
this time. No.
There was
no.
just there.
Well, yeah, it wasn't very good.
All right, let's talk right. about Chris.
We have a sponsor.
Saying, so we're getting, a second industry news section brought to you by the Olympic Biathlon, which was inspired by drunk skiers chasing squirrels.
Nice.
Yeah, probably.
Done.
Yeah. I like that.
Wow. All right, Chris, let's talk about, I found this funny. Diamond Alliance planned new Monopoly games based on Jay and Silent Bob, Back to the Future, and Sin City.
Oh, my goodness. That sounds terrible.
You know,
Sign me up. First of all,
you know, I've got a big problem with that. First of all.
Well, you got a big problem.
With that.
Right, okay.
With that. Because, first of all, there's a bazillion Monopoly games out there already.
There are.
Yes.
And
there's an
Elvis Monopoly.
Yeah, you know, there's everything under the sun.
Oh.
And then people have taken the Opoly portion of it and created their own versions of Monopoly without any kind of credit given to actually. Cause, so it's not actually like, you know, sometimes you can get like a Hamilton version of it or a Toronto version of it. But it's not actually called Monopoly. They call it like, I don't know, Hamopoly or something like that.
Yeah, Hamiltonopoly.
Yeah, or something stupid like that, right? So there's a bazillion Monopoly games out there already. Do we really need a Sin City Monopoly game? So let me ask you this. So instead of free parking, what's it going to be? Hey, you can come and stay at this dirty hotel or hotel, rather?
Yes,
you know?
Yes. Or, with the yellow bastard.
Yeah, right? Like, you know.
Wow. No, you're right. Now, here's what I don't understand. Okay, is it Hasbro? Right, Hasbro.
Hasbro.
So they're the ones, like, why would Hasbro, okay, they're selling Monopoly. People love Monopoly. Okay, so to produce a billion Monopolies costs you, it's easy. Each one is cheaper than the last, right? But then when you're fragmenting the markets into 7,000 different properties.
Right.
And some of the Monopolies will sell, like, 28 copies, and the other Monopolies will sell 200,000 copies.
Yeah.
And then you need shelf space at your Toys R Us
and
Walmart
right?
for each one.
Yeah.
In whose interest is it to have so many different Monopolies?
Well, exactly. And then not only do you have all the, what I'll call, like, the licensed versions of Monopoly, but then you're going to have, they've come up with, like, say, classic Monopoly.
Yes.
Where they come up with wooden pieces, and then they come out with like 70s Monopoly, which is the same thing, but just with different same pieces, but now they're metal or they're plastic. Right?
Yeah.
Well,
you've
got to think they've got to pace them and spread them all out just to give time for different, say, age groups to kind of, you know, grow older, and then the parents want to get them a Monopoly set, and then they have, you know, the freedom to choose amongst what's kind of in that current line. But also, you know, people are buying it for two different reasons, right? One is because, let's say, for Back to the Future, you know, say myself, huge fan of the films, you know, you'd buy that almost as a collection item because, hey, look at this. This is really neat. You
can,
not to say you put it on your mantle necessarily, but it's like it's on a shelf somewhere, and it's because, you know, you're Back to the Future, you like it. It's almost like having a figurine shelf.
You're right. And you know where this becomes popular? It's one of those things where, what are we going to get Billy for Christmas this year? Oh, I hear he loves Back to the Future. They have a Back to the Future Monopoly game now, don't they?
Let's get him that.
Well, why don't, the wrong thing is that parents should be asking, does he like Monopoly? You know, maybe that year before they had a falling out because Family Monopoly Night went wrong.
It's happened. It can happen.
But I just don't understand. They've got like Star Wars Monopoly. They've got all these Monopolies already. And really, like, what is Sin City Monopoly going to look like? Or, okay, what's Back to the Future going to look like? Are they going to do three Back to the Futures? Back to the Future 1, 2, and 3?
Oh, yeah.
And then, like,
I'm sure it's going to be locations from all three just jammed into one.
And
one
they end up being in the future in half of the game and not in the future.
Do they have a Playboy Monopoly?
I'm sure they do.
Is it 3D?
If only. Holographic.
Wow.
You got to wear those glasses.
Yes. Yeah, sure. Hey, Walt, get back to the game!
Yeah.
Huh? Sorry, where was I?
Lost in Playboy world.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I wish them luck. You know, ask your local comic book shop, I guess, if whether they're going to carry.
Well, yeah. I guess it's going to be an exclusive too, right?
Yeah.
Right, and that might be one of those items that not every shop necessarily orders. Some of
I don't
all
think
them.
Anybody
it might
ordered.
Just be a you know a geared to order thing. Yeah, right? You have to actually order. Special order it. So ask.
Well,
obviously,
maybe,
ask.
You never know. Maybe they'll sell more than five.
Hey, I hope so. And I hope they're all bought through your local comic book shop. Hey, let's talk about Spider-Man. Okay?
Let's talk about Spider-Man, baby. Let's talk about you and me.
Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that have been going on with Spider-Man.
All right, let's do it.
So, Spider-Man now
is
Captain Octopus. What's his name?
Captain Octopus. I believe that's his name. Let's just go with that.
Okay.
Dr. Octopus.
I was thinking about Captain America for a second.
I like
Dr. Octopus.
You know what? I think we should come up with a new character called
Captain Octopus.
And would he have like a captain's hat, like a sailor hat?
Yes, he would. With little things.
But he can't have an eye patch because they only have one eye.
Yeah,
so,
fair enough.
Yeah.
Hey, listen. But he would have two really big eyes. That's Captain Squid.
That's Captain.
Listen, just get back on track.
Sorry.
Listen. Dr. Octopus is Peter. No, it's not Peter Parker. It's Spider-Man killed Peter Parker.
Right.
So now with this new miniseries being helmed by Dan Slott, the guy that killed Peter Parker.
Yes.
And our good friend Ramon Perez is doing the artwork for it. Ramon, of course, from the Raid artist group from Toronto.
Yes.
Our excellent, talented man.
You know, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
Ramon Perez is a great guy. I've met him many times. He's an awesome, awesome guy. Great artist. And I love the fact that he's getting the chance to work on a book like this. Right? Now, having said that, continue on what you're going to say about the book.
Well, so what this miniseries does is it kind of tracks Spider-Man's first 2 months as a hero. So it goes back to, let's say, that time between Amazing Fantasy number 15 and, let's say, Spidey number 3, where Doc Ock is introduced. So the early days of him becoming Spider. Because what happens in comics, this is what happened in comics at that time. The origin issue, the origin, the telling of the story and the telling of the with great responsibility comes with great power comes great responsibility, all that stuff. That's kind of rushed through, right? In the comics.
Yep.
And then they move to introducing of new heroes,
new
and
villains.
Whereas I think what these guys want to do, I think, is kind of really analyze what's going through his head those first couple months and really kind of dissect it,
break it down
a bit more. And because it's a very interesting story. It's obviously the most interesting part of the life of Spider-Man is when Peter Parker gets that power.
Right.
And he's trying to handle it and deal with it and all that stuff.
But
so
don't you think...
That's going to be good in that sense.
But don't you think that they've done enough of these going back to the well, where let's do another origin story. Let's do another, what's he thinking between issues 1 and 2? And then what's he doing between issues 2 and 3? And, you know, they've done Spider-Man Blue. Spider-Man Blue. They've done Spider-Man Blue, which is kind of another origin story with Gwen Stacy and Mary Jane and all that kind of stuff. They've done, you know, they did, you know, Amazing Fantasy 15 and a half or 16 or whatever it was that they did. You know, they've done all these issues that are supposed to have taken place during that time period, but now all of a sudden Dan Slott comes around, who, he's a great writer, but it seems like he has, he must have something additional to say to that storyline. Because I just don't get it. I don't know why they're doing this again.
I don't know. I mean, it's, I don't know if it's been, I don't know when exactly the last time this has happened, but obviously they have an angle. Obviously they have something that they want to explore.
Yeah.
And I'm all for it if it's done really well and if it could add something to the character. It's so hard to add something to Spider-Man.
Right.
Right? And, you know, like, if you looked at, okay, this is an obvious one, but let's, if you looked at, you know, if we were talking about, you know, 20-some-odd years ago, oh, this guy named Frank Miller is going to redo the origin of Batman in year one, you know, we'd be going, oh, you know what, we already know the origin.
Right,
but he brought something really cool and new to the table in his telling. I hope it's something like that here. But the thing that bugs me, though, is, and it doesn't bug me, I guess this is what I wanted all along, is it all leads up to the all-new Marvel Now relaunch of Amazing Spider-Man number 1 in April.
Which I think is fine.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, yes, it's fine. That's the way it should be. It's almost, though, with Marvel, it's almost, honestly, you don't trust them.
Well, that's for sure.
Right?
Yes,
you don't trust them. You don't like, it's like, okay, you screwed my favorite hero up. Okay. And now, after a year and a half of torture, you're bringing him back. But you know what? How long? Your track record now is what? After 7 or 9 issues, they probably have some sort of quadratic equation going up in the Marvel offices on when exactly the optimal time for a relaunch of a title is based on certain data inputs, because maybe varies through character. And maybe Spider-Man, they already figured out that after issue number 11, they're going to redo something again, right? It's almost like you don't want to invest into the buy-in of, it's almost like watching, like if you're going to start watching a 26 issue miniseries, you know that you're going to have to invest a lot of time.
Absolutely, yes.
So
for sure,
you're making that decision to watch number one.
Yeah.
Not blindly, just I'm going to watch number one. Because now it's different, right? When you're watching TV shows and stuff, you go, okay, I have now a whole flipping DVD or whatever the hell they're called now, a whole season to watch and all that stuff. It's like, well, you know, Spider-Man fans, they'll flock to it.
Yeah.
But newbies, things like that, it's like, if you want to latch onto them, you have to give them consistent quality, longevity.
I agree.
To kind of get that base.
I completely agree. And but you know what? Having said that, I think, you know, having a new number one is not a bad idea. I think they did really, Marvel's done really well with the relaunch of all the Marvel Now comics, and I think this is going to be a great one too. But I am getting a little tired of the number ones all the time. But having said that, you know, they haven't done a Marvel Now number one yet for Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man number one yet. So why not?
Hey, you know? Most importantly, a new villain that will play a major role in the Amazing Spider-Man series will be introduced.
Interesting.
Very cool.
Interesting.
All right. Listen, Spider-Man fans, unite. head into your local comic book shop to pick up or to pre-order.
Yes.
Spider-Man miniseries by Ramon Perez. Ramon Perez and Dan Slott. And everybody hopefully looking forward to Amazing Spider-Man number one at your local comic book shop.
All right. Now, what do we got up next here?
Okay, Shecky, do we have any sponsors for... No, we got nothing.
Oh, yeah, we do. We always have sponsors hanging in the rafters.
Yeah, we do. Just wait and give us their money.
So, we're entering into the, I don't know, let's say the latter part of the show, brought to you by...
More ways than one.
The latter part of the show brought to you by The Walking Dead. What other TV show can impress you with a $17 per episode budget.
Oh, well, that's very true.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Did you guys watch Walking Dead at all?
Yeah, no, I've caught the last two.
Did you catch the last one?
Where they have, like, four actors through the entire episode and one home that they're trying to stay safe in.
This is a bit of a spoiler alert for those of you who haven't seen episodes one or two yet. Spoiler alert. But, you know what? I don't like the way it's going. I don't...
I like the last, like, the second episode a lot better than the first
one. Yeah, I agree.
The first one was two key characters having, like, their own emotional issues and breakdowns for almost an hour. It was... I thought it was boring, but not only that it was boring, but I found one of the characters to be redundant in their breakdown.
Yeah.
And the other character, though, was very informative. You got a completely, you know, a little bit of a backstory, little bit of a history. Yeah. That was okay. But it was just kind of boring. And it was just in the forest walking and then in a house in an abandoned town.
Yeah.
Like there was nothing.
No.
You know?
I thought the last episode, however, was much better.
Yes.
I really enjoyed I'm not really enjoying the different angles and all that kind of stuff. I thought it was kind of cool to have that being done once, but mm-hmm. I hope it doesn't continue off for the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, you know, you show one character and then what was another character doing at the same time? I don't need to do that for all the characters.
Right, right. And I think what it is the way that the half season ended is where everyone just got scattered. There was a big, you know, universal sort of catastrophe for them right at the prison and everything. And now it's all, I think the entire half season will be the journey and struggle to finally reunite again.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, however that happens and whoever dies along the way, who knows?
Yeah, no, I agree.
Reunited and it feels so good.
Who says we don't have music on the show
today? Yeah, we do have music. Peaches this is great. And herb. What, pieces of herb?
Peaches and herb.
Oh.
That's the song Reunited.
Oh, okay.
Hey, exciting stuff, Walking Dead. The comics, by the way, are available at your local comic book shop.
Nice segue.
Yeah. And you're listening to us at 93.3 CFMU.
I like that.
Radio,
I like that.
Podcasting, comicbookdaily.com, getthepointradio.com, I think. Hey, Chris, let's talk about a cool little project, a cool little kind of, I guess it's supposed to be a local news announcement. Lost Heroes, the documentary about the story of Canada's forgotten comic book superheroes and their legendary creators. A 90-minute documentary is airing, or actually not airing, having a viewing, what do you call it, a premiere?
Premiere, yeah.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the month?
Help me. March?
February 28th.
Oh, February 28th.
Friday
yeah.
and March 1st.
Oh, okay.
Both days at the Royal Theatre in Toronto.
Awesome.
Director and writer Will Pascoe will be there. A whole bunch of people we know will be there.
Did you get interviewed for this? Are you?
I jumped on late.
Okay.
I helped out a little bit with some contacts. I knew some people. I was emailing Will Pascoe.
Right,
he was
right.
emailing me back, and then I think I was able to help a bit.
Cool.
But I actually never got on camera with the interview.
Okay, so,
you know what? And I'm not an expert at the stuff anyway. I it was more my strength was I knew some people that could help.
Okay,
so
right.
I kind of
so just
them
to
up.
Clue in for our listening audience here. So it's hard to believe, but Canada at one point had a lot of their own superheroes, right? That, especially back in like the 30s and 40s.
Well, 40s actually. 40s.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's what the documentary is all about. And I encourage everybody, actually on Super Channel, I don't know who catches Super Channel, who doesn't, but starting March 4th, this documentary will start airing on Super Channel, and it'll air multiple times on Super Channel.
Okay.
It's a 90-minute documentary, but what they're doing is they're having like a premiere at a theater,
right? Right.
For you know, people involved and guests.
But
and stuff
a lot of people don't even know who some of these characters are.
Right.
So that's what I was getting
and
at.
What
so.
The documentary explores and studies and you know sheds light on is that era of Canadian history for Canadian comics where, in a nutshell, the War Measures Act of late 1940 bans American comics from entering into Canada.
Right.
Because we're at war, America isn't. All non-essential goods, we can't be spending our money frivolously on
right.
comic books because
right.
we have to spend it on munitions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And wool for socks and all that stuff
yep,
for
yep.
our soldiers. So, American comics are banned. in December 1940. Within a couple of short months, by March 1941, a Canadian's generic homegrown comic industry starts.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're getting some iconic characters like Nelvana of the Northern Lights.
Right, right.
Believe it or not, Iron Man was the very first Canadian superhero, and he was a kind of submariner type guy that lived under the sea who fought Nazi submarines.
Now, is that when Johnny Canuck came around too?
Johnny Canuck came around at that time. A whole bunch of characters like that. Unfortunately, after the War Measures Act was repealed in 1946, Batman and Superman and Flash,
Wonder Woman,
and Wonder Woman, they all started flooding across the border again.
Right, right.
And it was a death knell to our industry.
Right.
And of course, that's a 5-year little window.
Yep. Yeah.
You're talking about maybe 500 to 600 comics produced at that time.
Okay.
Four publishers tops.
Right, right.
And
right.
And it was forgotten. Like by the 60s, that era was forgotten.
Interesting,
right?
Yeah.
And our good friend Richard Cumley, in mid-70s, kind of does a Canadian, Captain Canuck.
Yes.
And, revitalizes kind of the whole Canadian independent scene. Independent scene of like sci-fi or anything like that, but Canada-centric.
Yes. Right? Yes. Having their own characters.
Characters and stuff.
Yeah.
So, and believe it or not, Captain Canuck plays a role in this documentary. But the documentary basically talks about that era in the 1940s, the forgotten, the lost hero.
Right, right, okay.
Some great people have been working on our friend Stephen Lipson,
who's an
expert at Canadian...
weren't they called the Canadian Whites?
The Canadian Whites, and because Canada was kind of so ass backwards at that time compared to the United States,
right,
we didn't know how to publish comic books in color.
Oh, really?
We did not know. We tried... published comic books in color, but like the color, the pink or something on the guy's face,
yeah,
it would be like an inch over onto the like blank panel in the guy's face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it would be all off and stuff.
So they ended up printing them in black and white only, and just kind of the whites as a nickname stuck. And so they were called the Canadian Whites.
Interesting.
And anyway, so I'm inviting everybody just to Lost Heroes, Google it.
I like it.
Hopefully, if they're in the Toronto area, head down to those two premieres and hopefully partake in it and check it out and just champion that whole Canadian comic scene.
Yep.
It's a great project, and I really, really think it's going to be well received. And what it does is it sheds light, like you and I try to do, on comics.
Yep.
It sheds light on Canada's very rich history with comics.
That sounds awesome. And this has been going on for a little while now, and of course there's actually been a little bit of a resurgence in the whole Canadian White issue. I don't mean an issue, but I mean in the idea of having Canadian Whites. It's starting to become a little bit more widely known.
Yeah.
There's been reports on it on websites and on things like that.
Actually, the great news is the Bible of the comic book collecting world is the Overstreet Price Guide.
Right.
It comes out every July. If you're a true hardcore collector, you pick up the Overstreet Price Guide.
Right.
Our friend Ivan Kaczmarek, who writes for Comic Book Daily, wrote a beautiful essay on the Canadian Whites, and that is going to be featured in the back of the Overstreet Price Guide.
Oh, awesome. That's
so
very good.
All the big collectors of comic books will finally kind of get a full exposé on this great, great era of Canadian comics.
Nice. All right. Very good. Yeah, perfect.
So, shout out to everybody involved in Lost Heroes, and I hope to see a whole bunch of you there.
Yeah, for sure. Shecky, you look like you got something to say.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, I even did some digging into some news today, and I just, I'd like to bring out some things that aren't really articles, but just some, headlines of sorts.
Headlines.
Some casting announcements and stuff like that, that
I've
come to find. All right, so, to start this off, I thought I'd pick something. I think it was in the news about a week or so ago, but we haven't done a show in a couple weeks. So there was actually a Marvel one-shot short that was made. Now, Chris, Yes, a one-shot
a Marvel one-shot short.
Yeah, so they did a one-shot short video.
Yes.
I guess like their one-shot of the comic book. It's called All Hail the King, and it's a 14-minute short, and it's got Trevor Slattery.
No. No.
from who played the Mandarin, right? That's who he actually was, but he was the actor, and he went, and so it shows what happened right after Iron Man 3. And it's like him from prison, and he recounts the story and how everything, something like that, something how it unfolded and everything like that. So anyway, that's coming out with the digital release of Thor, The Dark World, and also with the DVD and Blu-ray release on the 25th of the month.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is that...
that's like Ben Kingsley?
Ben Kingsley is going to be in it. So he's playing, you know, Trevor Slattery, who played the Mandarin.
Right.
And they've been doing this a little bit often lately, actually. They've had little sort of... I don't know what we call mini movies where they have
They're calling this a one shot.
Right. Well, okay. So they have like Peggy Carter had her own little mini movie in the back of one of the DVDs. Yeah. And now they seem to be doing this a little bit more often, just to kind of flesh out and kind of give people a little bit more to be able to entice them to buy the DVDs, I think, right? They give them more extras and that kind of thing.
Yep, absolutely. So I thought that was pretty interesting news. And you know, along that whole Marvel line, we're looking at The Avengers 2 is actually going to be filmed in South Korea.
Yes.
Which I find very convenient, because the UN right now is actually proposing to do some sort of, survey or testing of... I don't know what they're doing.
It's not a survey, it's not a test.
They are going to go to North Korea, and they are forcing themselves in, and they are believing to find that... proof that North Korea is being inhumane to its own civilians, which is almost 100%. So, should that break out into fighting or war, the Avengers will be close by.
I like that. That's great. That's
all
good. Yeah.
Part of the plan.
All part of the master plan.
So that's perfect. And that's then, moving over on a DC side now, we're looking at the Batman Superman movie.
Oh.
Casting announcements have been made. So, Chris, you saw the Facebook movie, Social Network.
Yes.
And did you see Zombieland?
Yes,
Woody
I did.
Nelson?
Yes.
Well, you know Jesse Eisenberg from it?
Yes.
He's actually set to play Lex Luthor.
Jesse Eisenberg is going to play Lex Luthor?
Yes.
Isn't he about
the curly haired, long haired kid who's only like, you know, late 20s or something,
well,
maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
I guess they're going for a young Lex.
Could be young Luthor.
Yeah.
But see, this is going to tie into the next thing I was going to say, too. So you got a younger Eisenberg, right?
Yeah.
You got Superman is pretty young in that film. He's not like the Chris Reeve. Of the day, right?
No.
He's not like a mature adult.
No.
So I guess they're trying to target them as still coming of age, I guess.
But Ben Affleck's got to be like in his 40s,
right? But you, see, now calm down, Chris.
I'm just saying.
Because
Simadana.
The director went out and said when Ben Affleck was cast and all the hate mail rolled in.
Yeah.
And it was, Ben Affleck this, Ben Affleck that. I guess he defended himself in a way because he said, Ben Affleck could not be more perfect for this role. We are going for a weathered, an aged, a man who has been in this for a long time.
Oh,
Batman.
Interesting.
So him with his
Batman.
Look at Argo, where he's never showing any emotion, he just looks kind of rugged and run down and doing his that right there. That can be like the aged, the wizened Batman.
Shave the beard off,
or leave it, whatever.
All right, look, Ben.
Yeah,
Ben. You're with
Ben.
Shave the beard off and just play Argo. That's all you gotta do, pal. You're in Iran. You're going through the checkpoints. Yeah, that face. Boy. That's it. Cut.
Well, then his last point was, you know, also, he's got a great chin.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
So that was...
I'll just say that. So did George Clooney.
Yeah, see? That. Okay. But I guess you start with, you know what? I think you start with the chin and then you go from there. I guess that was the foot in the door for Affleck there.
Yeah.
But also with casting for the same film, Jeremy Irons has been announced as Alfred.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. I like that. I could see him doing a good job as Alfred. It's going to be sad to not see Michael Caine as Alfred, but you know, I think Jeremy Irons could play a good Alfred.
Especially with the emotional character that he brought. Right?
Yeah.
Alfred really gained a lot of emotion in his own voice in the Dark Knight films. So anyway, that's that news. And then in film, but still kind of veering a little bit away from comics, James Cameron. He is very much so confirmed and is writing the sequel to Avatar, which is obviously the most highest grossing $2 billion. But enough, right? See, I found this is the interesting thing. Okay, so he's writing and planning the whole pre-production sequence. So this is very much so happening. He said, I think there's even two sequels, might be a trilogy.
I think I heard him say he's going to film both at the same time.
Yeah. So here's a man, though, who has, over the years, been that guy who's a great director, who has been known to only do one movie every, you know, 4 or 5 years, but it's always a hit. And even if it's not the specific, you know, action or drama genre, even if it's True Lies, it's a hit.
Yeah.
An action comedy, he makes into something, but he doesn't follow up his films. He never makes sequels. Ever.
No, he doesn't.
Ever. Yeah.
No.
So for him to commit to this, it means either he really loves the project or he really loves money.
Yeah.
Well, maybe some of that.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling he's
hard to sequel to Titanic, though, really.
But he's the kind of guy that probably he really loves the money, right? Because
show me the money.
Because he's, you know, I remember hearing something about the fact that the reason why he made the Titanic movie was because he was really interested in the Titanic and he wanted to give himself a chance to actually go in and see the wreckage himself.
Yeah, he did follow up with a documentary, something where they were actually below, you know, water level in the bubble, like a little craft, propelling down.
Submarine, they're called.
Well, no, but it wasn't, though.
Submersible.
It was a submersible. It wasn't a submarine. You know.
Submersible.
Same thing.
We weren't torpedoing U-boats, Chris.
Submarine.
Weren't we, though? Weren't we, Marty?
Well, all right.
Weren't we?
Never mind.
I think one of his, last case in point, that he's really intrigued by is he was one of the pioneers to the whole 3D, the dual lens. And so he says this is working in coordination with more new high-end technology. There's even more beyond technology that he's working with, and essentially he's waiting for that to also finish so he can start implementing it.
Oh, okay. So now hold on. Now let's just go around the table here for a second. Did you see Avatar, Walt?
Sure did.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
Did you see it, Marty? Did you like it?
I thought it was an alien version of Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Yeah. I liked it better when it was called Dances with Wolves. I didn't care for the movie very much. I didn't think, I wasn't attached to any of the characters. I thought the 3D was kind of interesting.
It was like a very vivid aesthetic film.
Yeah, the colors were cool.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
And I liked how it did at least take the time to explain the whole plot in detail. So it was like 2.5 hours, 2 hours, 40 minutes. You know, the last thing you want is a very intense, dramatic, you know, sequence of events at like 1 hour and 40 minutes running time.
Totally,
you feel like you're gypped. You don't get the whole, you know, people in film can't turn on a dime characteristically quick enough, and it doesn't make sense. Anyway.
Hey guys, let me go off on a tangent.
Yeah.
All
right. So you guys talked about something right there, and you know this cable stuff now. Walking Dead and
Breaking
Down.
Yeah.
What's that one called?
Breaking Down. Where a guy's got to change a tire.
Break dance for a living.
Well, while he's changing tires?
Yes.
Yeah.
This True Detective, this, you know, kind of Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, I saw that. I wasn't too keen on that.
Anyway, listen. Anyway.
You know, I'm just saying I didn't like it. That's all.
Okay. So, my point is, you can't, you know, you said 2.5 hours. You're seeing some heavy, heavy, heavy stuff go to these cable things, like Walking Dead and everything like that. And it's almost like, you know, some of the more weightier topics and the weightier stories, the character studies and stuff like that. It almost like there's a big kind of macro trend almost in the last 5 years or so to take that kind of stuff into cable.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, because you can't do
it. You have more time.
You can't do it in an animated movie.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not talking about a Disney sitcom here. I'm not even talking about an NBC, you know. What do you call it? 24, what do you call those things?
Made-for-TV movie?
Oh. Or whatever.
Yeah,
I'm talking about some nasty crap, you know. I'm talking about some mean-ass stuff
going
on in cable.
Like HBO miniseries and stuff like that.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, where you can do, like, what is it, 13-hour movie, basically, and really kind of, and you're getting some heavyweight actors going that route.
It's now okay for big film stars to do TV.
Yeah,
even more other TV, but I think that cable stuff where they take,
I was just talking with someone today about House of Cards, which is the Netflix show with Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
Apparently, I haven't seen it yet, but apparently it's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, it's great. And it's,
well, people are saying the same thing about, you didn't like it, but the
True Detective.
True Detective.
Yeah, people are saying great things about that.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be like a miniseries. They're only in it for the one season, and then they're going to make another season with completely new big name actors.
Yeah.
And he's going to keep rotating like that.
Right. Yeah.
But I did like Game of Thrones.
So my what it was leading into in a kind of unobvious way is you know, what, you know, is there room in that genre, in that milieu, for a comic book property?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But hold on, that's already been discussed.
Did I miss that part?
Well, yeah, about 4 months ago, we reported on the fact.
I thought today. Where was I?
A while ago, we reported on the fact that Netflix has signed on with Marvel to make movies out of Power Man.
You're right.
Netflix is just devouring content right now. Yeah. They're trying to make their own content.
But my point is, I think this is a chance if they want to have a really gritty Power Man or Luke Cage or whatever they want to call it, they can make a really dark version of that particular character.
Or Daredevil.
He would
lend himself to that. Exactly. That whole house
and there are no bounds on Netflix. Yeah. They write their own content. Right. Like, there's no, you know, R rate. Like, anyway. You know.
Cool. I'm completely agreeing with you on this.
All right. Hey, listen, let's move it on. We got probably time for one more thing.
We got one more. Very quick. 4 minutes.
We're
going
to talk about the Toronto Comic Con, March 7th to 9th. We will be there. We're expecting everybody to come say hi to us.
Nice.
And
who are some of the comic guests that are going to be there? Like, why should we go?
Yeah, other than to see your smiling face.
Don't take me there, because I'm very disappointed. You know what? Every single guy on this list is amazing.
Okay.
Can draw way better than I can, but also can draw, like, they're well worthy of the praise that they get and stuff like that. But my point is, most of these guys are local guys.
Right.
And this is what disappointed me about the list. Yeah. Okay? Yeah. So, we got your David Finch, who's probably living out in the States somewhere, but he's a Canadian boy.
Yeah.
You know, your Dale Keown's, your Ken Lashley's, your Leonard Kirk's, your Ty Templeton's. Yep. Great artists.
Yep. Yep.
Local to Southern Ontario. What I'm not seeing is any kind of...
Where's Stan Lee?
Not even Stan Lee. But you know what I mean? You know, like, are some of the artists that are being flown in? And, you know, some of, you know, where's... I don't know. I was a little bit disappointed.
And this is a three-day show, too, right?
It's a big show. You know what else it is as a show?
What's that?
It's the first show in this area of the year.
Yep, that's right.
There hasn't been really a show. There's a one-day show in November.
Yes.
But there really hasn't been a show really since, you know, last fall.
No, you're right.
So there's probably a lot of pent-up anticipation. Yeah. You may as well hit them with some good stuff right away.
Yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed in them not going out and spending money on, like...
Yeah, a couple thousand bucks or whatever.
Yeah, where's Neil Adams even?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, you know, so... Yeah, it's going to be great, because it'll be like, I hope the weather starts turning a bit at that time too, because we had that spring
feel.
I hope
so.
And it's a Comic-Con, so who doesn't want to go to a Comic-Con?
Absolutely.
It's being held at the Metro Toronto Convention Center.
Nice. And that's March 7th to 9th.
March 7th to 9th. We'll be there. I think it opens on the Friday around 4 o'clock.
Is this a Wizard World show?
No.
Fan
it's
Expo.
The guys that put on the Fan Expo.
Yeah, it's the mini Fan Expo,
Fan Expo. Yeah. And, so we're just plugging that show, I guess, because we're going to be there.
Nice.
And we're hoping to... everybody can come to that show and say hi and
perfect.
and partake in comic culture.
Yes, absolutely.
Then, of course, afterwards, go back to the local comic shop.
I think we get that already. Let's not blow their brains out with that.
Let's not blow their brains out.
All right, listen. Let's. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today.
All right, listen. Comic Culture is produced by Shecky Feldstein, aka Marty Berthelmer. And for comments and suggestions, please visit comicbookdaily.com. Click on the podcast link, scroll down to the comments field, and please add your comments. Also, check us out at getthepointradio.com.
We think.
If they'll have us.
Okay, Chris, now it's you now.
Oh, right. And remember, 2014 will bring you great tidings of good joy.
Oh, tidings of good joy.
Oh, sorry. This is an old form.
Right. Please go out and support your local comic book shop.
All right. And have yourself a great day.